Stay golden.
Hurricane.
Hello and welcome back to the Golden Hurricast. We are a weekly podcast covering Golden Hurricane athletics at the University of Tulsa. I'm Ryan Token.
I'm Matt Rechteen. Weird week in basketball, all things considered, Ryan. We saw the men's team. We went from the point of just nuke it from orbit, get rid of, like, restart everything, to then blowing USF out of the water in what could be a bounce back win. And then on the flip side, we saw the women's team absolutely, like, demolish a Memphis team that they took pretty much to the last minute in their first matchup, and then got beat, again by height on the road to Cincinnati. So kind of we saw from both ends the kind of what both teams are dealing with.
Yeah, ups and downs from the basketball season on both sides happened this week. The week of extremes, I think, a good way to put it. I put a tweet out there earlier, and it kind of encapsulates this, at least for the men's side. And for the winning side, there's a big win and a big loss, right? This week we beat USF by 31. That was the biggest win over a Division I team since the 40-pointer against Memphis back in 2020. But then on the flip side, the earlier game in the week, we played at Tulane, who's they maybe are 500 now. They were a losing record when we played them. I don't know what their record is now. They just beat Wichita State. But anyway, we lost to them by 34. And that is the biggest loss for Tulsa since losing on the road to UTEP in 2005. It's almost been 20 years since we lost by this much. I was going through there's no easy way to find the stat. At least I didn't know of one. And so I was just going through Basketball Reference every year's season results and looking, and I was like, it can't be that far away. Season by season, going back from 2021 down to 2020, 19, 18, all this stuff, didn't find one bigger than 35. Maybe I missed one, but I'm pretty sure the only one bigger than 34 was the UTEP loss, and that was the 2004 to 2005 season, and that the loss happened in January, so in 2005. Other big ones around there: loss to Cincy in Houston, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago. That 2019 season when we won the share of the conference championship, the 1920 year, we had a bunch of big losses in there. At least that's how I remember that season. Yeah, we won the conference title and that was awesome, or a share of it. But we also lost big in our losses, and that was true. Like, we lost by 31 on the road at Cincinnati that year. We lost by 33 on the road to Houston. Same amount we lost to Houston on the road in 2018, by the way, and found some other big losses in there too. But yeah, man, like, we had a big loss, obviously, a huge win. And let's focus on the win, I think, for a second, because it's more happy to talk about. But also, it was like, we were even saying after the Tulane game, like, man, I'm worried about USF coming to town on Sunday or Saturday. And there was reason to be worried. Like, USF is not a good team. Sure, they're definitely the worst ranked team in KenPom in the American by quite a wide margin, and still are. They had beat UCF. Was their lone conference win, so at least they got that one. But, man, coming off the loss against Tulane like that, no matter who you're playing, you get shellacked on the road like that. I mean, it's hard to come home and do anything. And we came home and showed out pretty well. So I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, obviously they're not very good, but I think we showed everybody that, yeah, maybe we kind of blew it against Tulane, but not quitting on the season doesn't seem like at all.
Yeah, it's what a world you live in where, like, this is, I mean, in pure absolute terms, yeah, it's a big win. Like, 30 points ain't nothing to slouch out ever. But to be like, wow, this is a big win. Like, we beat USF at home. Like,
well, that's not what I'm saying.
I know.
The 31 points
and
is the
that's,
big win.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's just kind of bizarre that the world we're in is like, yeah, beating USF shows that we're like still taking this season seriously, where it's like, I would expect that to have been like USF is kind of like a, not even a blip on the radar, like a team that
you expect us to beat USF by 31 on a good year. Even there's no way, man.
Well, I'm saying, like, not from like, if you just take it on the absolute, but just the fact that like going from a point where we were concerned about USF and like, wow, we could lose, like based on how this week has been going. And it's like, regardless of the margin of victory, like being a win over USF is not something that we should have been concerned about coming into the season. That's kind of my point. Mm-hmm. Is like, I think it just kind of showed how far we had dropped going into this game, that
yeah,
it's like, and yeah, a huge win, obviously. There's no way it's not like 30 points again. If you're putting, you know, beat somebody by 30, anybody by 30, you're absolutely clobbering that team. And that's great. And the team needed that to like show that, you know, one of these games isn't going to be close and we're just going to run away with it and then, you know, play with a lead and show mm-hmm. that you can not give up a lead. I think that is huge, just like a boost to the team. Cause you had, what were you up? Like Memphis 23 something at halftime, come back yeah. and lose that one. And so it's like, that's got to be in the back of the head, no matter how big your lead is. Like, as much as USF is obviously a like worse team than Memphis, which, you know, up for debate, how good is Memphis? Oh, they beat us anyways. but yeah, just like having that, knowing that you've had big leads and they've been squandered and it's like the season seems to be in free fall, like mm-hmm. getting that kind of off their shoulders, that's huge.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it helped the KenPom rating as well. We went up 20 spots after beating USF by that much, which was cool. And man, like the Bulls, man, they are in a tough spot. Brian Gregory's been there for a while now. Doesn't look like things are getting better. Things are actively getting worse. They shot 3-for-18 from the three-point line this year. They are the worst three-point shooting team in the entire country. And it showed. They looked horrible. I only got to actually watch the second half of this one, but even in the second half, like they were throwing up threes like crazy because they were already down pretty big, and it just got worse from there because they had to start shooting more threes. So it is bleak over there for the Bulls. I do really like Caleb Murphy, one of the players on that team, but outside of him, they are not a good looking roster. Like it just does not look like a roster you would see out of any team in the American, like just the level that we as a conference recruit at generally on average. They seem to be way below that. I don't know.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting seeing like Robert Stieg talk about, you know, their coaching situation, with that Brian Gregory had like verbally agreed to a contract after they won the CBI, and then COVID.
Oh my God. I forgot that happened.
Yeah. And apparently they didn't like, I guess they were going to like, oh yeah, we'll do it at the end of 2020 and then COVID and it got delayed. And so it's like, it looks worse in, I don't know. I mean, on one hand, good for USF for sticking to their verbal commitment, even after it looked bad. But on the other hand, like, damn, that sucks. Like, you hadn't actually signed him officially, and then the team just starts to crater again. And you're just yeah. like, well, shit.
Yeah, that is a nightmare. Oh, my God. Weird coaching situations. Not a stranger to those, but hey, I mean, ours isn't super great either. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I guess Frank Aith probably got, I assume his contract ends like early next year in 2023. And so we're at a pretty good spot here, I think, to, if we're going to, you know, move on, try to find somebody else. It's not like we're buying out a massive portion of that contract or anything like that. So I think we're in a decent spot.
Yeah. And I want to say, like, as much as, you know, this win was good, based on what happened in this last week, I am very much in favor of moving on from Frank Haith at this point. Like some of the comments he made after the losses and like benching Jariah Horn for an entire game, never really giving any explanations for that. I mean, it just kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Like you hate to see any coach throw like, and he never said any specific names, but it, except like possibly Nikita.
He totally threw Nikita under
which
the bus.
Is just like, that sucks. And the whole thing was like, Nikita's not normally out there. And like, that's why we didn't get a, well, it's like, who controls who's out there? Like,
well, Ray Doe had fouled out.
Right.
And so that's why he was
yeah,
out there.
But then it's like, it's not like Nikita just accidentally ended up in the game and caused it. It's like, you've got to like, I don't know. I think that's kind of trying to shift the blame somewhat when you still could have had a timeout, obviously. Like, mm-hmm. we had timeouts to burn. So, yeah, just like that. And some of the other comments, like he's had, like he said earlier this season, like just talking about guard play and stuff like that. I don't know. I was already, you know, for years, I think I've been on, I'd like to move on. And that is not going to change unless something miraculous happens this season. Like winning a game against South Florida, winning like a game against East Carolina here, and like those kind of stuff, not really going to change my outlook on the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody, you'd be probably hard pressed to find anybody, or I guess the majority of Tulsa fans these days, I don't think are pulling for Frank Gaith. I mean, obviously you want him to do well and you want the team to do well, but at this point he's been here for so long. We've seen enough of what it looks like. And this was supposed to be, you know, this year has not gone according to plan or according to expectation at all. It is far below expectation, especially with Jeriah Horn coming back. Imagine what the team would be like if he didn't choose to transfer back to Tulsa. It would be, you know, even more of a nightmare. And so I agree. Like, it's hard to argue for him. I don't see many arguments for him at all these days. Obviously, I want the team to do well. Like, I want us to beat South Florida by 31. I want us to beat Tulane on the road. I want us to beat them at home when we get them again. But it's just, you know, if we win out, whatever, that's good. I want it. Like, bring it on. You know, extend Frank Gaith if we win out and go to the NCAA tournament. That's fine with me. I don't care about the guy. Like, I think he's a good dude. I just, like, it's about results, and we just aren't seeing them. And so, you know, if we go win the next 10 straight, make the NCAA tournament, win the conference, fine with me. You know, but I don't know. In the long term, it just doesn't seem like that's the right move.
Yeah. And I'm not actively rooting against Tulsa. And I know that you're not saying that I am, but I just want to like clarify, like I'm not, I am just like, yeah, making an NCAA tournament, such stuff like that, totally different conversation than what I think is going to happen. And that's, we mm-hmm. like maybe finish at 500, not we play 500 ball to end the season. Like that's kind of what,
yeah, it's just
that's
like,
what I feel like is going to happen. And I'm just, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm way more excited to read articles about, oh, who are the good up and coming coaches and stuff? Like, what can I dream about?
Yeah, true. And it's just like, the reason I bring that up was because I see more and more these days, like just, you know, random people on Twitter will be like, oh, I'm actively going to not go or watch this game because I don't want to support the program that Frank Gaith is putting out there. I think that is totally the wrong attitude. Mm-hmm. It's the right move is always to go to the game, like go to the game and watch, let the administration handle the results on the court. Right. If we're losing all these games, which we are, you got to have faith that they're going to handle it. Whether you go to the game or not makes no difference. You know, like Greg Marshall got fired from Wichita State. That stadium was packed every day, right? There were some off-court issues going on, all that, you know, and it handled itself. And I know Tulsa has been a little bit lackadaisical in the moving on from coaches standpoint. Like, since we've been here, they literally have never fired a football or basketball coach since we've been doing this podcast, or basically since we got to TU, or at all since we got to TU. And so I understand where people are coming from. It feels like a very complacent attitude going on. But still, the answer is not actively root against the program and don't go to the games to like spite the administration or the coach or whatever. I think that's just the wrong attitude.
Yeah. Cause I mean, end of the day, I absolutely love to use players and like the passion and stuff. Like, why would you not want to go watch Darian Jackson, who's been like the heart and soul of his team for 5 years and is just so fun and such an awesome guy. Like, yeah, I'm going to go to these games. I'm going to watch him. Of course, Jeriah Horn. Heck yeah. He came back. How many people do that? That's incredible. And all these guys who are like wearing Tulsa colors, playing for TU, like, yeah. As much as I am never one to be like, yeah, I don't want to support our players. It's like one thing to be frustrated and pissed off and ticked off with everything that's going on. But like, why don't never take that out by like punishing the player? And nobody's like punishing the players, but like, well, I mean, kind of like, telling these guys like, oh yeah, I'm not going to support you because I don't really like what's going on. That sucks. That's that's BS. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And like you look down our roster, and this is even just, you know, just the broader take here, and it makes it even worse on Frank Gaith, is like the roster is talented. And we knew this coming into the year. It's a bunch of talented players on this team. Like Jeriah Horn is a fantastic player. One of our best players when he was here with us 2 or 3 years ago or whatever. Now he's back. He's playing the best season he's played in a long time. Sam Griffin is a hell of a point guard. Like, that guy has been just as good or better than I was hoping he would be when he transferred in. Ladavius Drain, now that he's getting more minutes, he's contributing in big ways. There's, like, Anthony Pritchard, finally, a local Tulsa prospect that we get to come to TU, and he's lighting it up. Like, he looks good. He's a young guy. He makes some freshman mistakes, but he's clearly a talented player. He's going to be huge for us, assuming he sticks around for his entire tenure. And so those are guys you want to come out and cheer for. And, like, there's a lot of that on this team. And, man, like, if you actively just don't come, you're just missing out. Like, even the results notwithstanding, right? Like, they're just fun guys to watch, fun players to watch play basketball. They're athletic. They're talented. Maybe the system doesn't quite fit what they're going for. But, man, they are definitely fun to watch. Yeah, another one I wanted to clarify here. I saw a tweet, I think it was from Tulsa Hop, no true road wins for Tulsa in over a year now. January 30th, 2021 was the last one.
I tweeted that.
Yeah, I assume you saw it from Tulsa Hop, no? Oh. He tweeted it right before you.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think so. I saw something about I think it was like on TV. I had seen we hadn't had a...
Oh, maybe. Okay, that would make sense. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, so multiple credits to multiple people here for this one. But yes, it's true. We have not won a road game in now over a year because we have no games. Today is the year, Mark. Today is January 30th. So when we're recording, we're going to put this out Monday or Tuesday. And we don't have a game, obviously, today. So we're going to be over a year since that happened. Obviously, still sucks, but somewhat misleading. It's definitely true. But after the ECU game that we won on January 30th, like January, you know, basketball goes all the way through February into March. We had one more away game the entire season that year, and it was a loss to UCF by 4 in March. So we had one other game after that up until this season now, and we lost that one. Still not great, obviously. And then we've played 5 true road games this season and have lost all of them. So, I mean, winning on the road, very hard. Not saying 1-6 on the road since January 30th of last year is acceptable, but not quite as dire as the, oh my God, we haven't won a road game in over a year.
Yeah, but that's
first take,
like less,
kinda sounds.
It's less exciting when you like put it in perspective.
Well, yeah, that's the point. Some nuance in here, Matt.
No, hot takes, like just headliners, clickbait. That's what I'm here for. I'm not here for any of this context or, you know, there's another word that I had, but I'll, whatever.
No, I know what you're saying, but it's, yeah, when I was looking it up, I just wanted to see, you know, that is a big stat, right? Over a year since we won on the road, that's pretty horrible. So I went and looked at last game or last year's season, and it's just home to end the year, like 10 in a row. And then like 2 games left in the season, we play UCF.
Yeah, absolutely not helped by like COVID just wrecking everything and shortening
for
the season. And I don't even know how many road games did we play last year total. Like, not a lot.
Nah, I mean, yeah, not very many, especially not after the new, like after the new year. Another thing from the Tulane game, and you mentioned it a little bit. We didn't talk about it. I don't think very much. So Jariah Horn, obviously, I think he was kind of the big story of this. We lost by 34, but tangentially related to that was we lost by that much probably because Jariah Horn only played 4 minutes in this game, came off the bench, played 4 minutes, didn't score in those 4 minutes. So like everybody is freaking out saying, what the heck is that about? Why isn't your best player on the court? Why isn't he contributing to the team? He's sitting there. He looks healthy. The announcers on TV were like, we don't know what's going on. Like all we heard was that he's going to be coming off the bench, but he's fully healthy. He's got no issues or anything. And so my first thought was like you mentioned some of the comments he made last week, and one of those was, yeah, we're dealing with like some selfishness issues. I think that was after the Memphis game or something like that. And he wasn't specific. Also, I tried to find that quote again today, getting ready for the podcast, the selfishness issues quote. I know. I mean, I saw it for sure, but I cannot find it for the life of me anywhere. Side note there, but yeah, he made these selfishness comments about people in the program and didn't give any other context, and a follow-up question I guess wasn't asked or anything. So I assumed in my head is like, okay, well maybe it's Jariah Horn, you know, he's coming back and Maybe he wants more than Haith wants to give him. You know, I don't know how that's possible because he's our leading scorer and an extremely talented player.
Be like, yeah, give him more.
I know. I don't know. Maybe it's like a, I don't know. I have no idea what it could be, but like, I can't think of any other reason he would have come off the bench and only played. I mean, that was clearly like a punishment thing from Frank Haith. So I don't know. Yeah, no, but I still don't know why or anything like that. Have you heard anything or have any ideas?
No. And it's just, I mean, I don't know how many schools at all would ever actually announce or like what they're required to or anything like that, but it's like just a complete difference. Football, we knew there were like going to be suspensions going into this year, and like, and there's just like nothing. Like, best player is out, very noticeable. A lot of people are commenting, and it's just like, I'm never going to address this. Like, that's just, It sucks as a fan.
I mean, I wouldn't address it if I wasn't asked a question. I guess I probably would. I'm trying to think as if I was Frank Haith, right? Would I say it on my own? But like, did nobody ask him? Like,
you gotta think somebody,
I'm sure,
did.
Somebody,
yeah,
had to.
And I mean, I can't imagine the answer being anything more than like, oh, it's an internal, it's a team matter. And it's like,
yeah, right.
Because like, we all know what's,
yeah, good point,
going on, but it was just weird to like not see it anywhere,
yeah,
ever mentioned.
Yeah, it's just really strange. Like, obviously, I mean, God, like, if the reason was, let's assume for a second that the reason was it's something with Jariah Horn and he has a selfishness thing or whatever. He's sitting on the bench and the team's just getting smoked. It's just adding to probably his own argument in his head saying, look how badly you guys need me out there. We're getting beat by 30 by Tulane. And so if I'm him, I'm like, F you, coach. Like, this is what happens when you don't give me what I want, which is not good. Like, I hope that's not the mentality that's going on there, because that's kind of toxic. But like, that's just my, I don't know, you know, who knows? You could spin this in 1,000 different directions on what actually happened here. But man, just very, just disappointing that it happened. And then even worse that it caused a 34-point loss to the Green Wave. Yeah. And the only other things I had on the Tulane game, I think, really were just, you know, everybody watched the game. You saw it out there. The other big story was just like how the team just totally seemed to quit. I don't know how related that was to Jariah Horn not being out there with them. He's kind of, you know, probably the leader on that team, vocal leader, maybe Darian Jackson, but performance leader, you got to think certainly is Jariah Horn. So maybe it was that, but like, man, like after halftime, even a little bit before, it was like no energy out on that court. Everybody is just kind of bummed, walking around slow, not playing hard defense. It was, I mean, extremely, you know, just depressing to watch. And I understand, you know, giving up maybe, you know, with 5 minutes left in the game. And honestly, we don't see that much from TU ever. Like, I don't remember seeing that ever before in any of my years watching Tulsa basketball. Even with 5 minutes left, we're usually out there playing hard. But the entire second half, it was just like, we're phoning this one home. I mean, it's not happening. Dry Horn's not out there with us. We're already down by 20. Let's just call it quits. I don't know. I was so surprised when that happened. It sucks. Like, that is not what you want your attitude to be. Obviously, they followed that up with the USF win, which is a nice bounce back regardless of, you know, like we said, USF not very good. But just really disappointing, I thought, to watch that happen against Tulane.
Yeah. I would say the only time that I can even think of a team that maybe gave up a little bit or just, like, wasn't super inspired to be there was Murray State and the NIT. Just because we had like expectations or like that letdown against UConn in the tournament where we were not forced, but we dropped to the NIT when we really wanted to be in the NCAA and like had a team that made it the year before and the year after. And it's like, we lost that game by like 23. And it's like, Murray State was just pissed about losing in their championship game. And even then, like, it was different. Cause I think it was that's a completely different situation in anything. It's like, yeah, I mean, they gave their entirety for that whole season to try and get to the NCAA and they fell just short. And so it's just like, kind of expect it.
Yeah.
Plus those guys,
Murray State team. Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, that Murray State team was incredible.
They were. They had Cam Payne on their team. Cameron Payne, who I think was on the Thunder. I mean, I know he was on the Thunder
campaign,
for a while.
Campaign.
I think he's somewhere else now. What?
Campaign.
Yes. Yeah. The campaign in the draft. It was awesome. Yeah, that dude lit us up. I don't remember how many points exactly he had, but he smoked us. I was like, oh my God, this guy is legit. Yeah. I mean, so that was at least fun part of that game to watch, even though I think we got beat pretty bad, right? What was it? Do you remember? Was it by 20 or more?
It was like 83-62.
Okay, yeah, somewhere around 20. Yeah, just brutal, man.
Yeah.
Oh, well. That's all I got, I think, on the Tulane and South Florida games. Obviously, one very low one with Tulane and a nice little pick-me-up with USF, but overall, I think it's not really a wash in the week. I feel like maybe it's just me being bummed about TU basketball, but it feels like if I were to take like the overall 1 out of 10 attitude on this week, even with a 31-point win, I feel like it's like a 4. It's under 5. I don't think it's like a wash, yeah. Right? Yeah. You were going to say 4-2?
Yep, pretty much exactly. Yeah. I mean, and I was going back to when I was texting Pat this week of like our current faith and hate is, and the reason I didn't tweet this is because I think it sounds better like in words, because I was very confused by this tweet. But he says, "I am not Job. I do not have faith." And that is, for people that aren't aware, Job is like that story in the Bible where God tests guy named Job, and to Job keeps his faith. Pat is not that. Pat is, and probably has had no faith in Haith for a while, but it's like, yeah, that's kind of where I'm leaning to.
Yeah. Oh, well, on to next week. We have two road games, no home game this week. We are at Wichita State. We are at Temple.
Can we break our year long streak
of a road win?
Yeah. Not.
I hope
one.
So.
Yeah.
We'll see. Right. So Wichita State, KenPom number 82, 10-8, 1-5 in the American. That game is on Tuesday, February 1st, 8 p.m. ESPNU. And then Temple is on Saturday, the 5th, 2 p.m. ESPN Plus as of right now. Who knows? Maybe that'll change. But Temple is number 127 in KenPom, 11-7 overall, 4-3 in the American. Start with Wichita State here. Definitely the more exciting game for me in my mind, just because, one, it's Wichita State. We have so much history with them, big rivalry game. They are also really struggling this year. The record isn't quite as bad as ours. They are 10-8 overall, but they are just 1-5 in the American. Like I said, their lone conference win number is over UCF. Everyone's getting their conference wins over UCF. South Florida did it. Wichita State did it. We have not played them yet, correct? I'm not missing You're something correct. There, right? Yeah. So yeah, Wichita State got them. Tulane just beat them by 1 in New Orleans. So Tulane beats us on the road in Tulsa for them. Then they go back home to New Orleans and that was in New Orleans for them. Yeah. And then they go, they host Wichita State and beat them. I mean, Wichita State, they're having a tough year, whatever. But that's a big win, especially for a Tulane program like that. Like Ron Hunter trying to get some momentum. Did you hear about this, Matt? Ron Hunter, before this game, the game was Saturday at like 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. He bought 1,000 students breakfast.
Damn.
before the game. And then I guess, I don't know if they all came to the game or they had to verify that they were going to go to the game in order to get the breakfast or something. But the student section was pretty packed. They beat them by 1 point.
Ron Hunter seems like the coolest dude.
Dude, he is. There was a very funny video of him after the win dancing like right next to the student section, like freaking out, going crazy. It was the best, man. Everybody loves that guy. There's no surprise why. He's just a happy guy. He's happy all the time.
They kept commenting on how much he was sweating, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah, I know.
He's so intense.
Sweaty and happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely is.
Seems like a really fun, just like personality, great like guy to play for. Oh, and man. You can see like the players seem to like absolutely love him.
Yeah, 100%. I know, man. Yeah. But yeah, so they got Wichita State. So Wichita State dropped one to Tulane. Let's talk about Wichita a little bit, though. So everything on that team basically runs through Tyson Etienne, easily their best player, to a fault probably, because they run – everything goes through him. If he has a bad game, they lose. They've lost a lot of games. He's having a down year, so it's not a good combination because they don't have really a good 1-2 punch anymore. Last season, the 1-2 was clearly Alterique Gilbert at the point, Tyson Etienne at the shooting guard spot, and that worked very well for them. Tyson Etienne won AAC Player of the Year last year, one of the best players in the country, shot like nearly 40% from three, really good mid-range shooter, can get to the bucket, can really really do all you want him to do. But without that guy at point getting him the ball, he is struggling. He is basically – so because Gilbert is gone, he's spending way more time at the point himself now, running the show, and that's made it hard for him to find his own shots. He has way more shot attempts per game because he has to try to force it, but he's shooting worse this season than he was last year. Way fewer, like, just normal catch-and-shoot opportunities you might see from a shooting guard spot. And he's also turning it over a lot more. I just don't think he wants to be at the point as much. Maybe he thinks he wants to be there, but his numbers were way better when he was playing the shooting guard position. His turnover rate this year is 14.4, worst of his career. Last year was 7.8, which was 16th in the country. Turnover rate, by the way, percentage of the time you turn the ball over, basically, is what that is. A little more complicated, but that's pretty much it. But man, like, Etienne, I love that dude. He is a baller. Like, he can really get it done if he has a good team around him. But I think with the loss of Gilbert and some of those other guys last year, it's just not working for them, for Etienne in general. And so these other guys are trying to step up a little bit. Like, Morris Udeze is still there, their big guy, their leading rebounder. Dexter Dennis is good. Ricky Council is good. Outside of those guys, there's not that much scoring potential. And so if Etienne has a bad game, they're in trouble, right? And so if we get good Etienne and he puts up 30 points, then we're probably going to lose. But if we get bad Etienne, we could easily beat this team. And it's Wichita. Any win against Wichita at any point ever is good for Tulsa. It's just it's a good win.
I know. Well, and I was looking at it, and I was like, oh, yeah, like, how many times have we beaten them since they joined the conference? And the answer is once.
Yeah, one.
That and one it was Elijah home, right? Joyner, like, yeah. Buzzer beater.
Yeah.
Great game. And it's like the only other time that we've beaten them in recent memory is like 2016, before they were in the American.
Yeah, like, that was at home too, huh?
Yeah. But then every other game, we lose. And it's frustrating.
Yeah. They got our number, man. That's what it is. Like, and of all the years for Wichita to have a down year, of course, we're doing the same thing. And it's going to be tough. Like, it's never easy to play there. The Roundhouse, it's freaking packed. Even when they're bad, it's going to be packed on Tuesday. So, I don't know. Like, it'll be, like, I'm very pumped for this game. I love playing Wichita State. We're both equally talented, I think. They've got, I think, the best player of anybody on either roster. But I think we have more skill, like, down lower on the roster. So, I don't know. Like, there's talent on the Wichita team. They're KenPom 82, like I said. They're pissed off because their season's not going very well. Who knows what their coach is thinking? Like, man, I don't know. I am beating Wichita on the road would be awesome. Like, it just always is. We've played, I think I saw last year, I didn't verify this today, but I think last year when I was looking into it, we've played Wichita, I think, the most, right, of any basketball team.
I would not be surprised if that was true.
I'm pretty sure that's true. I should have verified, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. And so it's always cool. So we'll see. We'll see what happens this game. But how are you feeling about it, Matt?
Nervous. I can't not be nervous about any game at this point in the season.
Yeah.
And just like you said, knowing Wichita State just somehow always has our number. The performance we just had at Tulane, like, it's going to be... Like, Tulane has beaten Wichita State twice, and we
swept them.
Yeah. Great. So, technically, I guess that means we have a shot, but Tulane also beat the crap out of us. So, what is...
Yeah, true.
I don't know. On statistically, like, on KenPom, Wichita State's a better team. What does that mean when that team has beaten you twice? Who knows? Analytics means nothing.
What do you mean? What do you mean when they've beaten you? We haven't played Wichita
yet. No, Tulane is... Like, Wichita State is above Tulane in KenPom rankings.
Oh.
But Tulane has won both games. So, analytics, meaningless. Throw them out the window. I don't feel great about this. I hope that there's some momentum from the USF game that kind of pulls forward. But I feel like this is going to be more similar to the previous, like, losses before Cincinnati, where we're going to lose close on the road, but just not be able to finish just because... That's kind of what we've seen so far. And I kind of, even when we're playing, firing on all cylinders, that just kind of seems like what happens.
Yeah. And like Wichita, obviously they've got that home court advantage. They play really well at home, and it's just going to be tough to get them. I think obviously I really hope we do. Like, the other big storyline there is Isaac Brown, first full year as the head coach, not going quite as planned, I think. Easy to say. Now, like, man, when he got the job, everybody was super hyped, me included, was really hoping he would do well, because Greg Marshall was turning into kind of a train wreck, it sounded like, over there within the program. But it has not turned out quite as well as anybody would hope, I think, at Wichita. Unless you're us and you want to beat them, in which case then it's probably a good thing. But yeah, I don't know. My guess is as good as yours. I think hopefully it'll be close, man. Like, we just get blown out by Wichita on the road, I feel like, a lot. So I'm really hoping that doesn't happen again, but it very well could, I think. And then one final thing on Tyson Etienne before we move to Temple. A quick note I saw from the Tulane game. He shot 15 threes in this game and hit 7 of them. So he's firing away. Like I said, man, like the guy, everything goes through him for Wichita. So the game plan 100% is find out how to mess with Tyson Etienne, slow him down. Because if you can slow him down, you have one hell of a shot to beat this team. Because their backup options of Dexter Dennis and Ricky Council are talented guys, but they're not anywhere near the level of Etienne this year. So slow him down. Game plan. Figure it out. All right, let's keep going. We got another one on the road. So the second one on the road this week at Temple. KenPom 127 again, 4-3 in the American, 11-7 overall at games. Again, on Saturday the 5th at 2 p.m. on ESPN+. We have already played them once. So if you listen, you should know something about Temple already, or if you watch the game. We lost to them at home back on January 12th by 5 points. They have one of the youngest teams in college basketball. I tried to find when I was looking around again today, just getting ready for the show, like the list of youngest college basketball teams. I feel like that used to be a thing. You used to be able to find like the youth. That probably still is. I couldn't find it for the life of me.
KenPom has just like a ranking. They're 357.
Oh, KenPom does? Yeah. Nice. That's awesome.
Their age is 0.45 years of experience. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. So they're like all freshmen.
Yeah. Yeah. Which the average is like 1.87. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're what was their ranking?
357 out of 358.
I thought they were 330. Oh, no. It must be 350. That sounds right. Yeah. So they're the second youngest team in college basketball. Yeah. Man, on the money. I mean, not surprising. You look at their roster. They're all freshmen. They have two seniors. They have no seniors. They have two juniors. Everybody else is an underclassman, and most of those underclassmen are freshmen. You look at their top contributors, like last when we played them, 3 weeks ago or whatever. Now, all their contributors were freshmen. Their forward Nick Jourdain, 23 points, leading scorer that game, was a freshman. Damian Dunn is kind of their biggest name guy, freshman, 17 points. Jaleel White had 11. Zach Hicks had 11. They're both freshmen. Jeremiah Williams played the most minutes on the team with 39. He played like 39 minutes in this game. There's 40 minutes in a basketball game. He only was out for 1 minute. That's amazing. But also a freshman. I mean, it's everybody on this team. Like Nick Forrester is the only guy when I look at that roster that I recognize the name from like past years. Or Jake Forrester, whatever his first name is. The Forrester guy, the bigger guy. It's just crazy, man. And like they're looking good. Like they have a young group that, you know, they look pretty solid. Their KenPom ranking isn't super great, but it's not that bad. They're super young. They've won 4 straight before they lost on the road to SMU just yesterday. SMU's a good team in their own right. They're a super young team, getting better every week. I don't like the matchup. We already lost to them at home. Now we're supposed to go on the road and beat them. I don't see that one happening. I honestly think we have a better chance of beating Wichita on the road. I don't know. That's pretty tough. I don't know if I think we have a better chance. I don't think we're going to win either of these games. Like, this is just not a good combo. Playing Wichita in the Roundhouse is never good. Playing Temple at Temple has been fine for us in past years. We have got a good record against them lately, but we already lost them at home, and their young group just keeps getting better together. Like, that doesn't seem like a winning matchup to me. So
we've not played well against youth this year. You look at Temple, you look at other? Air Force. Like,
Air Force super young.
Pretty sure. I'd have to double check. Yeah. We are 2.07, 139th in age.
All right, middle of the pack. Yeah.
Yeah, Air Force is 342, so they're also very close to the bottom.
Yeah, dang, man. Nice. Yeah, youth. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. We need a younger team.
Kids these days just so good at
not
basketball.
Not usually what you want. Yeah. Did you say he's just so good at basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's funny. Yeah. It'll be tough. Like, obviously, I don't have anything else to say on Temple, really. They're really young. They're playing well. Yeah, they're coming off a loss against SMU, but they are a talented team that already beat us once. So I don't feel great about it.
Yeah. And they've beat UCF. They've beat Cincinnati. Aaron McKee seems to have found something that works here in year 3.
Yeah, and Damian Dunn for them is a baller. Like, he's another one that I really actually like to watch play a lot. And so, despite the game, and like, if we're getting beat by a lot, just watch Damian Dunn. He's a fun one. And then watch Darian Jackson and Dryhorn and Sam Griffin, because they always play hard and play good. Almost always. All right. Moving right along. Around the American. Don't have a ton to say, so I'm just going to rattle off the scores. I didn't watch a ton of basketball this week, so I don't have any kind of context around these games. But in case you're interested, I'll spend a good 45 seconds on the scores here. So on Tuesday, Temple beats Cincinnati at home 61-58. Wednesday, 26th, SMU beat South Florida by 20 in Tampa. Wichita State beat UCF by 5 at home in Wichita. We lose to Tulane by 34, obviously, in New Orleans. Doesn't sound good. Still doesn't sound good coming out of my mouth. It sucks. Thursday, the 27th, Memphis beats East Carolina by 17 in Memphis. Don't know what's happening in Memphis. I don't know. ECU somehow plays well sometimes. Other times they get blown out by random teams like Memphis. Saturday, the 29th, Houston beat UCF in Orlando by 14. Tulane beat Wichita by 1. Already talked about that one in New Orleans. That was the one where Ron Hunter bought breakfast for like 1,000 students. SMU beat Temple by 8 in Dallas, and we beat South Florida by 31 at home in Tulsa, which is beautiful. All right, keep it going here. Women's basketball, couple good ones. Matt, do you want to kick this one off?
Yeah. So, like we talked about last week in our awesome interview with Angie Nelp, definitely listen to that episode if you haven't. Just going to plug that in. It was awesome. Yeah, a lot of fun.
Totally.
So, yeah. Ryan and I got season tickets. We said we were going to. We went to the game, Memphis.
We did.
It was really fun. Definitely kind of started off slow. We were down in the first, at the end of the first period, 11-10. Just like a lot of shots weren't going our way. It seemed like we were just having trouble getting to the basket. And then something just switched, just completely reversed in the second quarter. Like we scored 22 points to their 12 and just like started pulling away. Like it was back and forth for quite a while, but I mean, our guards just were way too much for Memphis to handle. And it really just carried over. I think like in the third quarter, we put up 30 points and then the issue kind of reared its head again. What we've kind of seen so far this year is that we play really fast, even when we have big leads. And in the fourth quarter, all of a sudden, our shots weren't dropping in. We were making turnovers that were allowing Memphis to get kind of into the game. I mean, we still won by 12 points. So it's like, you know, fortunately, you do enough early on that you don't have to worry about it as much. But yeah, you've definitely seen times where, it's fun when we're playing fast. But you saw like Angie Nelp trying to like, hey, slow down, like not a Frank Haith, sit down and like, let's just not play offensive anymore, but just like allow the shot clock to get down a little bit. We don't need to score every 40 seconds. And like once they kind of started slowing it down again, then the game really just felt like it was put away. And so I think part of that is a young team for a lot of our players. Like you have Tamara Poindexter, Delaney Crawford, like there's a lot of freshmen and sophomores playing and getting significant minutes on this team. And so that stuff with like over time, you're going to see a lot fewer of those mistakes. And then like the seniors that are playing. So Maya Mayberry, Rebecca Lasky, Maddie Biddle, like they're ones who were having incredible, like Rebecca Lasky had 21 points, I think, on the game.
And three steals in this one.
Yeah. And so that's kind of where you see, and I think we'll see the rest of the team kind of get there. It's just fortunately in this game and in ECU, because that's where we saw it last week, our leads were way too much for them to come back. But USF, we saw the opposite. So
yeah, right. Yeah, and the youth point is good. Like even Yvette Mayberry is just a sophomore. She's got to be the leading scorer for the team this year. Let me double check on that. Yeah, Yvette Mayberry leads the team 14.6 points a game. And yeah, they're a good squad, man. I mean, that was it was a pretty dominant win. We lost the fourth quarter by 6 or something. I don't remember what the final was, but Memphis beat us in the fourth. And like you said, they went on a little run there. We were playing a little too fast, slowed it down a little bit and kind of coasted out the rest of the game, won by 12. And it looked good. Like shot 44% from 3, 50% from the field. Turned Memphis over 21 times in that game. They got some good players, like number 4 and number 5 on Memphis. I don't know either of their names, but they're clearly very good players. One of them, Imani Jefferson, I think, is number 5. Maya Stovall, number 4, maybe the other way around. But those are like, they had good guards. They didn't, the thing was that they didn't have like a really good big, and that like, that's what gets us and what has gotten us in past games. So we can play with anybody's guards. Clearly our guards can outshoot and play defense well against people that are their size. But it's when we get some of these, you know, more forward heavy teams that like to get it inside and play physical down low. Those seem to be kind of our kryptonite this year.
Yeah. And like you talk about fast starts and then what kind of happens, like, so quarter by quarter, or I guess the official term is period. And that is what I have learned today. So nice. First period, Tulsa is outscoring 305 to 219. So like 86 points there.
Oh, sweet. This is on the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Second period is 308 to 230. So 78. Third, 326 to 283, so that's 43. And then we're actually trailing 301 to 318, so 17 in the fourth. So you kind of, like, that's pretty obvious. Like, you can see the trend. Like, we come out fast, generally, kind of stick with that. And then in the fourth quarter, it's part of it has just been we're not seeing shots, or, like, turnovers are costing us, and we're letting some teams kind of get back in it a little bit. And so I think that's kind of like the final, not final step, like obviously there's more, and like you were just talking about, like height is something that's gonna have to be figured out, or how to take down teams with height, but getting that distribution so it's positive across all four periods. Like, you don't want to put yourself in a situation where teams are all of a sudden coming back and potentially stealing these games. It's happened. Right. We've seen that happens on the men's side. We saw it happen to the women with USF. So I think that's just kind of like one point to address.
Yeah, totally. And I think even on top of height, it's just like these teams that really like to get it inside and like play inside basketball. We don't play them quite as well. And so, I mean, obviously height is usually why they're doing that. But even if they don't have like a Cincinnati, who we're about to talk about, we're going to start talking about them now. Their main big was Aram Niang, and she's 6'3", which I guess is pretty big, but it's not like monstrous, you know. And she killed us. I think she had 18 that game, season high for her, led all scorers in that one. And it's just because they kept getting her the ball in there, and we play really good defense on the outside from around the 3-point line and a little bit inside that. But man, you get the ball inside on us, and it looks like we got a little bit of trouble there. But yeah, lost to Cincinnati. We can move to that one now. Lost by 6 on the road on Saturday, just yesterday, as of recording time. Basically, everything was worse than the Memphis game. We shot worse from 3. We shot 33% from 3. Only shot 40% from the field compared to 50 against Memphis. But again, it was the inside game, and Aram Niang. They also had, like, 3 guards who just, like, all of their points were 2s. It was just, like, short little 2s. Milton, Hayes, and Wilson all had 11, 14, and 13 points, and Wilson shot some 3s. So did Milton, but they, you know, I guess those two kind of shot them pretty well. 3 for 5 and 3 for 6, but 4 for 10 from the field and 4 for 8 from the field for those two. So they're getting it in there too. And then Hayes, clearly all her points coming from the inside. She shot 1 3 and missed it, and had 12 points besides that. So yeah, I mean, it was like we shot the ball worse. They got the ball inside. They won the turnover battle. They won the rebound battle. When all that happens, you're probably not going to win the game.
Yeah, and so just going back to like, oh, it's 6'3", like, is that tall? Yeah, for us, so to my point, Dexter is our tallest player that plays consistently, and she's only 6'1". Nobody else, like our next tallest, we have one at 6', and then a couple freshmen and a sophomore that haven't played a ton at 6'2", but that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So even that, even 6'3", just like outsizes everybody on our roster.
Right. Yeah, we're definitely a small roster. But yeah, man, like when you lose the turnover and the rebound battle, and you're giving up a bunch of paint points, like I think we lost the paint point battle 38 to 26, right? It was just like, it's tough, man. Maya Mayberry struggled, 2 for 7 from 3, 3 for 11 from the field for her. Yvette, Maya Mayberry, on the other hand, good game. 4 for 5 from 3, 16 points. Tough games, though, from both Maddie Biddle and Tamara Poindexter as well, who both went 1 for 5 from the 3-point line, which is just not usually what you see from a team that shoots it as well as we do. Just couldn't get it going against Cincinnati. All right, moving along, women's team also got 2 games this week. Rematch at home versus Houston on Wednesday the 2nd. That's at 6:30. and then on the road at Wichita State on Sunday at 2 p.m., both those games on ESPN Plus, as are, I think, almost every women's basketball game. So, Houston, 9-10, 10th in the American. First time we played and we lost by 13 back on January 8th. That was on the road. Since their win over us, since Houston beat us, they've lost five straight. They lost all their games. They beat us. They beat one other AAC team who I'm blanking on. Then they beat us, and then they lost their next five. So hopefully that is a good sign for us that we can come back and maybe get this done and get the revenge game on them. Wyvette Mayberry had 22 in this game. Maya was out for injury. She missed several games this season. This was one of the ones that she missed. She's obviously back now, so that'll help a lot. And then for Houston in that game where we played them, Layla Blair put up 23 on a 7-for-13 shooting, 4-for-7 3. So somebody to watch out for.
Yeah, and if you look, like Houston has dropped down to 84 in the net ranking while we've been climbing up. We're like 87, right in between us, SMU at 86. Like, this is a game that we can be competitive in. And I think it's just adjustments. Like, how are we going to play differently in this game? Part of it, Maya Mayberry is going to be back. So we're going to have, you know, another like elite shooter out there, which I think will be part of it. But like, take the Cincinnati game, take the previous game against Houston. Let's see how we adjust our game plan.
Yeah. And you said Houston was 84th?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that is surprising. Like, they're 10th in the American. Like, that is a team that doesn't and has a losing record. That I guess probably goes to show how competitive this. I mean, we've talked about it on past episodes of how much more parity there is on the women's side in the American than there is on the, like, you look at the 10th team in the men's side in KenPom rankings. It's probably us, right? And like, we're at 170 or whatever we're at right now, or 150. Whereas the tenth team in the women's side is sitting at 84, right? A top 100 team. So that's pretty solid there for the women's side of things.
Because, like, yeah, they're 10th, but they're ahead of us, who is, like, 6th in the conference just by conference record, and SMU is 3rd, and they're behind Houston. It's kind of weird, because I thought net ranking is supposed to be more on wins-losses. Like, KenPom obviously has some sort of, you know, like, your adjusted ranking and all that. So it kind of makes more sense how it's not necessarily reflective of your record, but net ranking is whack.
Yeah, there, it's definitely got to put more on wins and losses than KenPom does, because otherwise Memphis wouldn't be 58th when they lost 8 games already this year. But somehow they're up there, Clemson's up there, all these 10-loss teams are up there. It's just like, yeah, it's much more, I guess, like talent and efficiency than wins and losses.
Doubt. Analytics can't win games.
Yeah.
Only in form.
Yes. All right, so then the other road game is at Wichita State. Again, that's on Sunday at 2 p.m. Wichita, 8th in the American, 11-8 overall. Best player for Wichita looks like probably senior guard Mariah McCauley, averages 12 points a game. Like Tulsa, the Shockers, strong start to the season. They've hit some bumps down the stretch here. They are coming off an 18-point loss to UCF at home. UCF, very good. UCF and USF, still the kings of the conference on the women's side, or the queens of the conference, maybe I should say, on the women's side. But Wichita, I think they're a fine team. I don't think they're anything to stick your nose up at or anything like that. Just like, they have a better record than Houston does. Where are they in the net, Matt, if you've got that pulled up?
I don't, but okay. Give me a second. Let me pull it up.
Okay.
112. So
what are they?
112. So 30 behind us, like not too far back.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that one should be fun. On the road, like, you know, we get Houston at home, so we'll be able to go to that one probably. But Wichita on the road, be able to watch it on ESPN Plus. Definitely will be watching, like anything Wichita State related. It's always fun to watch Tulsa play them. So looking forward to that one.
Yeah, and I mean, their non-conference schedule, kind of similar to ours, but they also played OU and KU. Like, these are good teams. So they have definitely, just because they have 8 losses, like, that means not too much when your losses are against really good Power 5 teams.
Right. Very nice. All right, anything else on the women's side before we move on? We really don't have much left in this episode.
Nope.
All right. Let's keep it going then. We only have little kind of quick hitter things here. First up, Josh Johnson. Apparently standing out in the warm-up and pre-lead-up to the Shrine Bowl game, the East-West Shrine Bowl. Saw a couple tweets, nothing big, but a couple tweets that he's really like creating great separation in his one-on-ones and warm-ups and practices leading up to the game, and just really making a name for himself out there more than people kind of expected from him, which is really cool. Not surprising, because I feel like, you know, he put up good numbers this year, but he was kind of under the radar all season. So, and like, you look at his big games against Ohio State and like Cincinnati, like he plays well against the big dogs. And I think, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder for sure. So when you see him, like, I feel like he could really go off on the Shrine Bowl. So I'm going to watch that game. It's on the NFL Network. It's televised. It's on February 3rd. They play it at the Raiders Stadium, Allegiant Stadium in Nevada. So tune in if you're trying to watch it. Again, February 3rd.
Thursday?
I don't know the time. Shoot, I should have looked up the time. Let me look that up right now.
Shrine Bowl.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
East West Shrine. It is 3 days, 20 hours, 12 minutes, and 28 seconds. So,
but there is like a game, though.
Yes, it's the Shrine Bowl game itself, I think, looks like it's supposed to be at 4 our time. It's weird. Week schedule.
4 o'clock on Thursday?
Yeah, here's the game day.
Cool.
5.
5 o'clock on Thursday, NFL Network. Tune in. East-West Shrine Bowl. Josh Johnson will be out there. I did, when I was like looking around Shrine Bowl stuff, I don't know anything about the history of this event,
5
really.
5 PST.
5 Pacific, so that'd be 7 our time. So 7 o'clock on Thursday on the NFL Network, Raiders Stadium. Check it out. But I was looking up, like, you know, history of this event. I hear about it every year. I've never really looked into it. It's kind of weird. It is. So the Shrine Bowl, sponsored by Shriners International. So I'm like, okay, what is that? Formerly known as the Ancient Arabic Order of the Nobles of the Mystic Shrine.
That's the hat, right?
They wear red fezes, yeah. Yes. Okay. Something Freemasons involved in there.
Classic.
I don't know. It's just kind of an odd background here with the Shrine Bowl here. But yeah, anyway, net proceeds from it go to some various charities. Shriners Hospitals for Children is in there. Helps children with orthopedic conditions, burns, spinal cord injuries, and cleft lip and palate issues.
Did you never see the Shriners Hospital in St. Louis?
Know about it. Okay. I don't know if I ever drove past it, but yeah, I had heard about it there. Just didn't know the background behind it. But yeah, like it's a big event, right? Scouts from all over the place come watch the game. NFL, all kinds of NFL scouts will be there. So it's fun. It's cool to see him sticking out there, making a name for himself, and hopefully he has a good game on the third, improve his draft stock a little bit since he is declared, and best of luck to him. That's pretty sweet.
Is Tulsa considered East or West?
Good question.
Okay, I'm going to look at East roster right now. Ah, man, does not look like, well. Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they don't actually assign you based on your team, because the East has San Jose State players.
Oh, really? Okay.
And regardless, he is on.
He's on the East. Okay. He's on the East offense.
There was the load more button kept showing up, and I didn't hit it again. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so check him out. Cool. Yeah, I see a UCF player is going to be playing for the East defense, Big Cat Bryant. See what other American players are in here, if any. No more on the East defense. Let me see the East offense here. Scanning way too fast. Probably missing all kinds of them. There's a UConn player in there. All right.
Saw that. Nebraska player.
We go to the West side here.
Hayden Howerton on the O-line for SMU.
Hayden Howerton. Yeah, I just saw that too.
Demary-
UAB, future American Conference, Garrett Prince, tight end for the West offense.
Damarian Williams from Houston.
Oh, nice. God, he's awesome. Cool. That'll be fun.
And I think that's it.
I saw David Anene from Houston's D-line too.
Yeah.
He's on the West defense.
See him there.
And that looks like everybody. So yeah, some American Conference players to watch for. Definitely going to tune in. That is cool. That's always a fun one. And again, February 3rd, 7 p.m. Central Time. Allegiant Stadium, NFL Network. All right, next. I want to give a little shout to merch. We've been putting some stuff on Twitter lately just about our progress here. We did an initial survey a few weeks ago about, like, does anybody actually want this? Like, would anybody actually buy it if we did it? We got enough feedback from it of yes, basically you would. So we went a little further, met with a vendor, that we are working with. We've been working with them for the last couple of weeks, just going back and forth with some emails. Sounds like we're coming out of the wire on like finalizing some things here. So it's going well. We've basically decided on the shirt style and the hoodie that we're going with. We basically, all that's left is really settling on how many of each size we're going to order and stuff like that. We put a poll out on Friday asking that. That poll will probably be expired by the time this episode comes out. But if you didn't answer the poll and you want us to know what kind of size you need, just like tweet at us or send us a DM or whatever, you know. We got a pretty good amount of responses on the poll anyway, so I think we're in a pretty good spot for that. But please, if you have, especially if you are a like somewhere on the extreme of the sizes, like a small or an extra small or like a double X or larger, that's what we need to know the most, right? Because almost everybody falls in like the medium and large or an extra large size, but it's the outer bounds that we need some more info on.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're feeling pretty good about on merch stuff. Anything to add, Matt?
No, we also have mugs, but we're going to post those. Or the plan is to get everything up and running so you can just go to the Golden Hurricast. I almost said Tulsa Hurricane. Don't go to their website for our merch.
No, do not go there.
TheGoldenHurricast.com should have integration for all of the merch that we have. So right now we're looking like shirts, hoodies, mugs, possibly stickers, and other things if people super want them. So stay tuned.
Yep, it will eventually, just to clarify. It does not right now, but when we are ready to roll with all the merch stuff, that's when we're trying to push all those changes.
On my secret beta version of the website, it does.
Yeah, and it's working well, we think, so we'll see. But yeah, look forward to merch. I'm freaking psyched about it. I think it's going to be really cool. The design, I think, is going to be, you know, it's going to be our logo on the front of shirt in a big circle, right? So it's pretty straightforward, but I think it's going to be sweet.
Tri-blend
shirt, yeah, by the way, for those requesting that, which... I think is totally the right answer. Oh my God, we felt the shirts on Friday. They are so comfy. Tri-blend was a great call. They are screen printed on there. They're not ironed on logos or anything like that. So we're feeling pretty good about what the final result's going to end up like. All right. And final thing, I just wanted to give a quick call out. I saw a tweet about this. Dexter McCoyle, who last week we talked about, so 2 weeks in a row talking to some Dexter McCoyle. He retired from football last week. And this week, saw a tweet that he is joining FCS football team Incarnate Word, which I'm pretty sure is in Texas somewhere, as their safeties coach. And also, it's like they publicize it as safeties coach, right? But in the fine print on the bottom right, it says safeties coach and NFL and CFL liaison, which is cool. It makes sense that a college football team would want to have that, especially as like a recruiting tool. You can say, hey, we've got this guy who like knows all about the NFL and CFL and can help you get there, even from an FCS school. So I get the draw. I just thought it was funny they put it in the fine print in the bottom right of the tweet. But it's cool. Good for him. Getting a job out of football, or I guess still in football, but out of playing in football. So I thought it was cool. And it looks like Incarnate Word is in Texas. So there you go. Yep.
I got nothing else to add.
Cool. We'll call it there. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. We are on Apple and Google and Spotify and Overcast and all those places. While you're over there subscribing, make sure to drop us a rating and a review. Those help. They really do help a ton. If you'd like to support us financially, you can do that by buying some merch in a few weeks whenever we put that out, but also by going to thegoldenhurricast.com/support. You'll find those ways. And finally, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram @GoldenHurricast, or you can send us an email, and that email address is thegoldenhurricast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you next week.
Stay golden.